I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, we'll focus on the upcoming Iowa caucuses and what they mean for the larger presidential race. First, the Delaware House continues to deliberate a bill to abolish the state's death penalty. The measure narrowly cleared the Senate last year, but it's been languishing in a House committee until the chairman agreed last week to release it. The bill would abolish capital punishment for first-degree murder, although it would not apply to inmates now on death row. Democratic Governor Jack Markell has said he would sign the measure if it crosses his desk. The leadership and direction of the politically influential Philadelphia Federation of Teachers will be up for grabs over the next few weeks. As WHYY's Kevin McCoy reports, the current leadership team is trying to fend off the most robust challenge it's seen in decades.
The center of its agenda.
We have to address those issues of poverty, or things will never get better in the classroom. And I think that is kind of a big, scary notion, but 11,000 caring teachers and other professionals can do this.
Rote is running for union president as part of the Caucus of Working Educators, or WE, a group of rank-and-file teachers, counselors, and nurses who came together 2 years ago. They formed in part because they believe the leadership team currently in power, known as the Collective Bargaining Team, or CB, is too disconnected from the classroom. Central High School history teacher Yassine Mohammed, vice president on the WE caucus slate, pulls inspiration from the victories of underdog caucuses that have risen to power in cities such as Chicago, Seattle, Los Angeles, and San Francisco.
The CB team, majority of them have not been in the classroom for 2-3 decades, right? So we would like to have teachers floating in and out of leadership positions.
A change in union leadership could have a huge impact on the 130,000 Philadelphia children who attend district-run schools in the city. Rote says her group will run a social justice advocacy union, which will organize around big issues that affect kids inside and outside of schools.
I want to explode some of the notions that we accept in our building, like standardized testing as the most important thing. And I want to talk about things that would really help my kids. I teach English language learners. Those issues are important to me. The parents are concerned with things about immigration and how they can get access to health care.
Part of the caucus's frustration with existing leadership is that members have been working under an expired contract since August of 2013 and haven't seen across-the-board pay raises in 4 years, all while staff levels and school conditions have worsened.
The only thing that can explain that is a lack of leadership.
Through this time, though, the district has operated on austerity budgets and has sought major givebacks by the union, which incumbent President Jerry Jordan has successfully deflected.
They think that, you know, you can go to a table, you can sit there and bang, you know, and you can scream, and that instantly they're going to say, oh, okay, you know, we're going to drop that. It doesn't work that way.
Jordan, who taught for a decade beginning in the mid-70s, became head of the union in 2007. He leads a party that's been in power since 1983.
People should look at what we've done and look at the kind of challenges that we have faced and have been very level-headed in our response to things that have been absolutely unheard of.
In recent years, despite the absence of a contract, Jordan has overseen a series of major political and judicial victories. In 2014, he faced the most aggressive action against the union in recent memory when the School Reform Commission voted to unilaterally cancel its contract with teachers and impose health care concessions.
If we went on strike, the SRC would get exactly what they wanted because that would have meant that we would have been at an impasse legally.
Instead, Jordan has so far successfully beat back that move through the court system, with a decision still awaited in state Supreme Court. In the meantime, Jordan has refused to sign a contract that doesn't mandate a full-time guidance counselor in every school. Under Jordan's leadership, the union also poured a ton of time and money into the campaigns of Governor Tom Wolf and Mayor Jim Kenney, two Democrats who were philosophically very much in line with the teachers' union in the larger education reform debate.
We were out canvassing neighborhoods on Saturdays and Sundays, knocking on doors, talking to people, encouraging them to get out the vote. And some of the members of the We Caucus were there, but not many.
Leaders of the Working Educators Party dispute that characterization. Politics aside, Amy Rote and others say Jordan has done little to inspire those working in classrooms.
I think they're turned off by the union. And I think they've never been asked, what do you think? Or what do you want to do? And that's something, a real stark contrast between CB and we, is that we do care what you think. We think the answers lie with the members.
The two factions have much in common, most fervently in their dismissal of the value of charter schools and their distrust of district leaders. Ballots go out next week to members who will have about 3 weeks to mail them back. Rote believes it's either side's race to win.
We have a few hundred We loyalists. There are a few hundred CB loyalists. And the other 10,000 people are up for grabs.
Kevin McCrory, WHYY News.
The 2016 presidential campaign gets underway in earnest Monday evening when Iowa residents gather at caucus sites statewide. Joining me with a preview is David Redlosk, Rutgers University political science professor and director of the Rutgers Eagleton Poll. Dave, welcome back to Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you're the professor. Take us to school, but give us the thumbnail version of what's a caucus and how does it differentiate from, say, the Pennsylvania or New Jersey primary system?
So a caucus is basically a meeting. People get out of their chairs on a cold winter night here in Iowa and go off to a local school, church, public building, and meet with their neighbors and talk politics for a bit. That's the simple version. There's, of course, a lot more to it. The biggest difference, of course, is in a primary, you can get up, you know, polls are open 12, 14 hours. You can go vote. If there's no line, it will take you 5 minutes to do it, and you're on your way. With a caucus, you must show up at a specific time. The caucus generally starts at 7 o'clock. If you're not there at 7, you don't get the caucus. And you have to commit to staying for some time. For the Republicans, probably an hour. For the Democrats, it could be a couple hours.
Now, that longer time for Democrats, I understand it is a more convoluted process for the Dems.
I don't know if I'd use convoluted exactly. The negative connotation there, I think, is not quite fair. The Democrats' process is public. The Republicans do a secret ballot and, in a sense, simply cast a ballot after hearing some speeches about candidates. The Democrats stand up publicly for their candidate. And more importantly, they have the opportunity to express a second choice. If their first choice is what they call not viable, generally that means doesn't have at least 15% support, a Democrat can move on to a different candidate, something that's pretty unusual in American politics.
Do we credit that system for Democrats, or is it mere coincidence that whoever emerges in Iowa does better as a Democrat than the Republican winner?
I think it's been more coincidence than anything this time. It has been the case that since 2000, 2000, 2004, 2008, the Democratic winner in Iowa has gone on to be the nominee. I think the dynamics simply differ every cycle. Sometimes Iowa, you know, points out who's going to win. More often, what Iowa does is tells us who's going to lose.
Professor Redlosk, few as hardcore as you, I understand you've been in Iowa off and on since August. What are some of your takeaways at this point?
Well, one of the really interesting things I ran into very early on was how much the rhetoric sounds similar on both sides. It really struck me, right? Republicans, even back at the state fair in August, were talking about inequality in their own language. They were talking about the little guy getting abused by the big guy. And that's exactly the story that Bernie Sanders tells and Hillary Clinton tells.
Now, just 3 nights out from the caucuses getting underway, have you seen a recent election cycle where it was this close? It seems that Cruz and Trump and Clinton and Sanders are pretty much tied.
The 2012 Republican caucuses were close. And in fact, on election night, it was virtually a tie between Santorum and Romney, to the point that the Republicans announced Romney the winner when, in fact, it turned out to be Santorum. So the fact that it's tightened up, the fact that it's close, I think actually reflects how things often happen in Iowa.
Do you think there are still hearts and minds to be won over, or Is everybody pretty set?
There are hearts and minds still to be won over. We did some data collection in 2008 in the caucuses and found in our surveys that something like 12% of those in the caucus came in undecided. That has literally made the decision at the caucus. Another significant chunk makes their decision right now at the last week. So there are still people shopping and go to events, and you'll see them.
That 12% seems huge. By contrast, is it your hunch that anything close to that is in existence when folks go to the polls in Pennsylvania or New Jersey?
I tend not to think so. I tend not to think that people walk into a primary voting booth still uncertain. The difference in the caucuses is they know they'll go to the caucus and they'll talk to their friends and neighbors. And they may want to gauge the room. They may want to get a sense of what people are thinking. And they'll listen to speeches and attempts on the Democratic side at persuasion.
Professor, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
David Redlawsk is a Rutgers University political science professor and director of the Rutgers Eagledon Poll. You can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org and listen to WHYY-FM Monday night at 9 for NPR's special coverage of the Iowa caucuses. Turning to this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania joins a multi-state effort to improve the accuracy of the state's voter registration database. The Department of State said today that the Electronic Registration Information Center uses technology to compare data from the more than dozen participating states against information from the U.S. Postal Service and the Social Security Administration. The nonprofit corporation receives voter registration data and some motor vehicle records from the states every 60 days. Two of Atlantic City's top casinos are reinvesting tens of millions of dollars into their gambling areas, hotels, and entertainment venues. The Tropicana today announced a $25 million renovation that will revamp 500 hotel rooms, a casino area, eateries, and its outdoor multimedia light show. That announcement comes 2 days after the Borgata announced that it's spending $50 million on projects this year, including an outdoor pool where its short-lived Borgata Festival Park was last year. The investments are seen as essential in the cutthroat gambling market in Atlantic City and the northeastern United States. Clear skies, 38 degrees, it's 6:18. Tonight's forecast, increasingly cloudy skies, low overnight 27 degrees. Tomorrow, cloudy, breezy. Friday's high near 40. There's a 20% chance of snow showers as well. Little or no accumulation expected. To the weekend, Saturday, plenty of sunshine, high near 40. Sunday, enjoy a mix of sun and clouds, high near 50 degrees. And ahead to Monday, partly sunny, high 51. It's 6:19. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's pause now for some music. Hailing from Bucks County, here's guitarist Tim Farrell with his composition, Off the Cuff. Thank you. That's guitarist Tim Farrell from his CD, Cascadia. He was joined by bassist Michael Manring and pianist Pat Robinson. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free Y-Stream.
Fox Chase Cancer Center, part of Temple Health, supports WHYY and Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. Gynecologic oncologists at Fox Chase Cancer Center perform complex surgeries for patients with cervical cancer. Fox Chase doctors are also actively involved in developing new therapies for treating cervical cancer. Through clinical trials, they are able to offer patients access to promising treatments and experimental therapies that may not be available elsewhere. Now offering next-day business appointments. Learn more at foxchase.org.
Supporting WHYY, the Academy of Vocal Arts presents Philadelphia's first professional production of Montemezzi's L'Amore di Tre Re since 1960, in concert next Tuesday at the Haverford School Centennial Hall. King Archibaldo's plan to reveal his daughter-in-law's infidelity spins rapidly out of control in this lost treasure, which combines the lyricism of Puccini and the impressionism of Debussy. Christopher Makatsouris conducts the AVA Opera Orchestra. More at avaopera.org or 215-893-1999.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. A Philadelphia city councilman says a bill he designed to help the music industry is misunderstood. Musicians and promoters are up in arms and burning up social media in reaction. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports that a march on City Hall is now planned for next week.
It's been exciting. I'm trending. I think it's good. You know, no, all news is good news.
Over the past few days, Philadelphia City Councilman Mark Squilla says he's been feeling the heat on social media about his bill involving licenses for venues currently using DJs, bands, or even playing music from an iPod. Squilla says it's all a big misunderstanding.
The intention of the bill was to close a loophole in there that allowed for streaming and music to be played in nightclubs, dance halls, that were not getting the special assembly license. There was other language added for public safety issues to collect some names and addresses.
That artist registry, as it's been dubbed, has musicians planning a February 4th march on City Hall. The legislation asks venue operators to collect addresses and phone numbers for all DJs and band members and share them with police upon request. Lee Vandertak of the Philadelphia DIY Music Collaborative says the bill and the registry need to be killed.
I really believe that it hurts the huge community we have of budding young artists in our city, and it hurts small businesses and venues that all have already been struggling to remain afloat with the influence of corporate giants such as Live Nation.
Squill has already said he would remove the registry once hearings are conducted on the bill.
There were some tweaks and some misconceptions that weren't agreed by me when we introduced it. So we already have amendments in the works. So these amendments adding, if we all the concerns added, will be amended before the hearing and sent out as a proposed amendment before the hearing so people can review it.
Musicians and others are hoping at the hearing Squill will give a full explanation of why he wants to expand the need for the so-called special assembly licenses to more venues. Musicians say their march will go on as scheduled. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, in the United States, Chinese students make up higher education's fastest-growing international population. Sometimes, parts of American college life can be hard to adjust to, so Temple University's tapping a shared love of basketball to bring those students into the fold. During the broadcast of Sunday's game at South Florida, Temple's hosting a contest to choose Mandarin-language basketball broadcasters. Five student finalists will show off their play-by-play and analytic skills, battling it out in front of judges and students. Having a hard time imagining the sound of Mandarin in a Philly sports stadium? Well, earlier this month, the five aspiring broadcasters taught their fellow students how to cheer in Mandarin.
来自天府
Go out.
天府雄西
Perfect.
Temple will host a viewing of the Battle of Broadcasters in Morgan Hall, the school's new high-rise residence hall. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.